Welcome to the Clark Howard Show, where it's about you and that wallet of yours. I want you to learn ideas from me so you can save more and spend less. And don't let anyone ever rip you off. Clark.com is our main website. ClarkDeals.com, well, that's where you go to find all the great bargains. And coming up in just 20 minutes, there's been a move afoot to allow you to rip open your retirement accounts to use for whatever. And I'll tell you what's behind that and why it's so Clarkrageous in just a few minutes on today's show. So there's a great question, and that is, how do you teach values about money to your children? And it's something that I find that just about every financial writer at some time or another tries to crack the code on that. And I want to tell you something. I have three children, and they're almost like three only children. They're 28, 18, and 12. You should see it when all three of them are together. They're so used to being the center of family attention. And then they're all three together, and they vie for attention with each other and with us. But that's besides the point. I just thought of that. Anyway, so my oldest was not the most careful with her money as a teenager and didn't seem to really have picked up any of my values in particular about money and about being frugal with it and saving money and all that. And it was very frustrating for me as a father. And she was the first one along. And what I didn't realize was the long game. And that is, now at 28, she is incredibly careful with every single dollar. It's phenomenal. It's intense watching her and her fiance, how careful the two of them are with their money. Because let me tell you, that was not who she was as a teenager. And I was thinking about this because it really matters not what you and I say, although it's important what we do say, and I'll talk about that in a second, but it's what we do. Kids pick up on hypocrisy big time. And if they learn from the way we handle things that are good habits, part of that seeps in. But the payoff is when you explain about money to your kids. And a lot of families, talking about money is not cool. But let me tell you something. If you want your kids to not be clueless about money and how to handle it, you got to talk about it. Not obsessively, not as if money's a god, but about the goals you have in life and how important it is to save and ways to save. My teenager, when she was in the ninth grade, she's now a high school senior, she was in this class at school, and the teacher was asking something, and she spoke up and she said, "Well, wouldn't a Roth be good for that?" And the kids looked at her in the class like, "What's that?" And once she explained it, they were like, "What a nerd you are, but a knowledgeable one who over time will really benefit from it." And my 12-year-old, I was just having an argument with him last night about the fact that he doesn't know how to let money sit, that any money that comes around, it's got to be for the newest video game, for his Nintendo this, or his Minecraft that, or whatever. That money is, as soon as it is in his possession, is to be consumed. And so You know, I talk about this a lot with him, and that's the key. As a parent, you can't control what kind of adults your kids are going to be. But you can have an ongoing conversation and remember how you handle things affects so much how they'll handle things. Chris is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hello, Chris.
Hey, Clark. How you doing?
All right. So which of my three kids is going to be most mad at me?
No idea.
Well, Chris, tell me how I can serve you.
Yeah, so earlier this year, my wife and I had, you know, we just purchased a home, I cut my savings in half and used it as a down payment on the house. Then we had a huge catastrophe happen, and that burned out the other half of my savings. So just
is everybody okay?
Oh, yeah, everything's fine.
Okay.
Appreciate you checking. So, anyways, my wife and I have been gradually building up our savings. It's not much. Just easy numbers. It took a $40,000 loss in 1 month.
Oh, man.
And so, yeah. So, we're building that back up.
So, wait. I want to look at the positive here. You, before you bought the home, had $80,000 in savings?
Yeah.
You know that's outstanding.
Yeah, but unfortunately, it got taken down to 400.
That, let me tell you something. When you have the kind of attitude about money where you had built up a reserve of that size, it means that I worry not at all about you and your wife with how you handle money over the intermediate term or the long term. It's all gotcha. Just details we're going to talk about.
All righty.
Because most people, you know, live on fumes. They can't handle, you know, surveys show that most Americans could not handle a $400 unexpected expense.
Got
you were able to handle $80,000. So you got a lot to be proud of, and whatever path you take from now, you're going to be fine because you're of a mentality, you and your wife, that you live on less than what you make.
We do, yeah. I appreciate that, Clark.
So the strategy you're trying to noodle is what? Tell me where you are with this as you rebuild.
I owe just over, we purchased a vehicle, 5-year loan, we're 2.5 years in, almost paid off on it. Now, because my savings is tight, I'll have just under $5,000 there right now, working our way back up, like I said. Now, I'm just looking for the wisest decision. We overpay our car payment more than double. We're paying $450 a month on a $200-and-some-dollar car payment.
What interest rate does that car loan carry?
Oh, 2.9.
Okay.
Now, if I break it down, I'm only paying about $2.60 interest per payment now because it's on the tail end of the loan. So I'm wondering, is it better if I just continue making payments till it's paid off through attrition or...
Yes. Yeah, don't pay any extra. Don't pay any extra on the car loan, even though... you don't earn a lot on your savings. If you pay off your car loan and you don't have sufficient savings, you can't just go treat your car like an ATM.
Correct.
So
the last thing I'm going to do is get a title loan. That's not going to happen.
Right, right. You're not doing that because that's several hundred percent. So
yeah.
So just pay the car off the rest of the way as agreed.
Okay.
And you'll pay it out, the vehicle out really early simply because you've been prepaying so much.
So you would recommend dropping down to the minimum payment and then just doing it that way, or would I?
Yes, just pay whatever you would need to meet the requirements on paying on the car loan, whatever that you said 200 and something a month is the
about 212. Yeah, we've been paying 450 for the last 2 years.
So pay 212, and then you're going to have more money to build up your depleted savings.
Okay, nice. I was just trying to get the wisest opinion on that one.
Yeah, and there's not necessarily an answer that's 100% true in this case, but I'd say 95% pay the car loan as agreed and beef up the savings quicker.
But yeah, that was actually not an option I considered even, so thank you.
Sure. Well, best to both of you. And again, I'm sorry you're overcoming a personal catastrophe, but it sounds like for you, you're going to move well past it easily.
Absolutely. Thank you, Clark.
Sure. And Heidi is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hi, Heidi.
Yes.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you.
You want to talk about your son? What's happening with your son?
Yes. Well, I've got a 12-year-old son. And
is your 12-year-old son better with money than I described my son a few minutes ago?
Oh, somewhat, but he's just started a finance class at school. So the last 2 days when I've driven home, he's like, everybody has an allowance except me. I said, well, you earn your money. So
he gets paid for chores, right?
Yes, absolutely.
So I don't have an objection to an allowance. You know, if you want to give him an allowance of some amount of money, and then when he wants stuff, he has to pay for it and figure right. out what his priorities are. I mean, I don't mind an allowance just for breathing. But I do think there's value in having chores. And we were doing that with our kids when they were younger. We don't do it now that he's 12 and his sister's a lot older. Both sisters are a lot older. But we used to have a chore wheel. And they had to do that every day. And we didn't give them any money for doing the chore wheel. It was just right. what was expected.
Yes.
So do you have your son do chores at 12 and he gets nothing for it, or does he get money as he completes chores?
He does chores, and he does it because everybody in the family has to contribute, and we pay him for extra things like wash the car, or we dog sit so he gets paid to take care of the dogs and mow the lawn, things like that.
I love that. You know, I'm old enough that I grew up before there were child labor laws where I grew up.
Yeah.
And I had real jobs starting at 11. You know, I worked in a warehouse starting at 11 years old. And that probably was not safe. We didn't think that way a million years ago. But having that sense of responsibility and that you earn money, I think he's at an age that that's a great thing to do.
Me too. I agree.
So what's your son going to do with the money that he makes doing these various tasks?
Well, it's not his money that I'm concerned with. It's thinking about college. And we're a little behind, possibly. I have about $20,000 set aside for him, but it's in a credit union money market.
All right. I don't want it there.
If it's earning teeny tiny dividends.
Yeah, I don't want it in that. So you're a California resident?
Yes.
California has a fantastic college savings plan.
Okay.
And it is one of the best in America. And that money, if the real purpose of that money is for your son's college, I'd like you to put it in a 529 account with you as the owner mm-hmm. and your 12-year-old as the beneficiary.
Okay.
And then that money will get 6 years to grow tax-free and be spent tax-free on college. And whatever you add over time, add it to the California 529 plan.
Okay.
And what I'd like you to look at in their fund choices is yes. I think the best choice is to put them in what's known as an age-based portfolio,
mm-hmm.
where the risk level steadily reduces over these next 6 or 7 years so that okay. you're not going to get as much return on the money as he gets closer to college, but also with lower risk.
Mm-hmm. All right. I just wasn't sure since we'd waited so long.
No, you're fine.
Was it even worth it?
Listen, most parents with a 12-year-old have saved zero pennies for college. So don't fret at all. And if you go to Clark.com, I've got a 529 plan guide. If you put that in the search box, you'll have to skip past some of the ads that pop up first, then click on my guide, click on the California link, and in just moments, you'll have your child set up to start funding his college tax-free.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
Sometimes having a big heart can lead people down the wrong path. And there's a move in Congress right now as people in various hurricane-affected states from Harvey and Irma try to rebuild to allow people to tap retirement savings without paying a penalty, but just paying taxes to use that money to rebuild. Now, again, the intent is right of the with this, but the result is a bad one. And this is not something you should do. When you tap your retirement money and you have to pay all that tax, you're fighting from behind forever. So even if you don't have to pay the 10% penalty, most of the time people are paying a 10% penalty, you end up with like 54 net cents of each dollar you would draw from a retirement account. You drop the 10% penalty. So let's say you end up with 64 cents of each dollar that you have to be able to use. You're making your money work too hard. And then you have to rebuild it later. And maybe you're never going to be able to rebuild to where you were. In fact, the math shows you can't. So I know there are various times in life where you think, hey, I got that piggy bank there. Have that 401k I can borrow from at work. I got this IRA I can do a withdrawal from. Avoid that temptation, except in a time of absolute desperation. In the case of the aftermath of a natural disaster like these hurricanes, you may think that qualifies as the time of desperation to do it. But the federal government is going to offer any of a number of programs with extremely low-cost borrowing for people to put their lives back together. And that is a much more effective strategy than raiding your own retirement account. Trust me on this. I know it's a pot of gold you're looking at to get your life back in order quicker. Don't do it. So great to have you here on the Clark Howard Show, where it's about you learning ways to save more and spend less. And don't let anyone ever rip you off. Clark.com is our main website, ClarkDeals.com, where you go to save money. So do you know that there are some auto manufacturers that really put their money where their mouth is? I had to check something because somebody told me, where was I? They were showing me their new Hyundai. And instead of talking about the car, they kept talking about the warranty that came with it, which I found was very interesting. And so I then saw a news item about this, and they were right. Listen to this. Hyundai gives you a 60,000-mile bumper-to-bumper warranty on the vehicle. So does Kia, which, they're common ownership. They're not identical ownership, but they're common. And I was thinking back forever ago when Hyundai had, I hate to say it, but they had the worst reliability record and reputation in the United States. They had come into the United States in the 80s, and they came in with a car called the Hyundai XL. And it did not excel. It had a lot of problems. And so when they wanted to reestablish their brand, which had been a new brand in the United States and was suddenly tarnished, they came up with an ultra, ultra long warranty, which was nothing like it in the car business in the United States. And although it's not the same one they had back in the 80s or early 90s, this is really great. 5 years, 60,000 miles, bumper to bumper, and then a decade on the powertrain. So it's or up to 100,000 miles. So for most people, the average person drives like 12,000 miles a year. It would really be like an 8-year powertrain warranty. But that's fantastic. And they're not the only ones that do a really nice warranty, because Jaguar is also doing the 5 years, 60,000 miles. So Jaguar, a brand that historically didn't have the best reputation, even when it became a more reliable car, there was still this thing in people's heads that Jaguars may have been beautiful, but they weren't that reliable. So this is an area that when you're looking at buying a new car, I think it's something that does make a difference, is that you look and see what kind of coverage you're offered. You know, the most common kind of thing now is 3 years, 36,000 miles is the kind of baseline in the automotive industry. I'm sure there's some people who offer less than that and a handful that offer more. But if you really want to know you're not going to be reaching in your wallet all the time, look at the companies that are really standing behind their product. And then you don't have to be vulnerable to all those pitches about why you should buy those overpriced extended warranties. Victor's with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hello, Victor.
How you doing, Clark?
Great. Thank you, Victor. How can I be of service to you?
Yes. So I got married shortly after the housing bust.
Well, first, congratulations. Timing probably felt inauspicious, but...
Yeah. Well, my wife and I had our own separate houses before we were married. So, of course, the amicable decision was to move in with her. In the process, I was forced into the property management business. So I've been renting out my first home for almost 10 years. So now that I have this skill, why not expand? So doing some research, I came across a few websites that I've referenced. And my question is, what are the pros and cons of purchasing property online as opposed to traditionally hiring an agent?
So I am 100% opposed to buying properties that are ones that you have not thoroughly vetted. You know, I want you to, you became an involuntary landlord during the real estate bust.
Yes.
And you made it work. And so I want you to keep making it work. And the way you do that is you be methodical. You come up with your strategy of how you look for property, how you find neighborhoods, how you decide on a street. And I want a producer, Joel, to talk for a second here, because Joel lives, eats, and breathes and sleeps this, and has four homes now at 33 years old, three of them rental properties. He's developed enormous equity. And Joel, share with Victor how you, now that values have really reflated in a lot of areas, how do you still find your properties?
Sure. Yeah, for me, initially, it was really important to buy homes that were close to where I lived so that I could mow the grass myself, that I could see it every day. If I wanted to go over there and see what condition it was in, it was easy to do. If it's over an hour or more away, it's really hard to do. Mine were within a mile of my home residence, and I think that can be really helpful. Just, and it doesn't have to be that close by, but close enough where you can check it out. You can check in on the property often. I think that's really important first step. And you also know that neighborhood well. If you live close by, you know the neighborhood well enough that you know what homes are going for, you know what houses are worth, and you know the trajectory of the neighborhood. So this last house I bought was the first one that I've bought outside of my neighborhood, and that even is only about a 12-minute drive from my house. And it's a neighborhood, again, that I'm really familiar with, that I've hung out in a lot, that I believe has a lot of good things going for it, and I really enjoy that neighborhood. It's one that I feel comfortable that I would be happy to live in it. And so,
and how many properties do you look at over the course of a week?
Sure.
5,000? I mean, you're always looking. It's like unreal.
Yeah, well, it kind of gets to be an addicting habit just to at least look at the internet every day, an app on your phone, right? Like Zillow or Redfin, something like that, so that you're seeing what's going up, what things are selling for, what things have sold for in the last 6 months. Having that kind of information at your fingertips and cycling through it on a minimum weekly basis, but probably closer to a daily basis if you're interested in buying, that's super important.
Victor, as you hear Joel, you hear this is 180 degrees removed from these websites that you can go to that say, hey, we have a perfect rental property for you. We've already acquired it. Here, buy this one from us. It's turnkey. Right. That's the kind of pitch you saw, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I do not believe in those at all. Because if they really identified a great revenue-producing property, they're never going to share it with you.
Okay.
Makes sense?
Yes, that makes sense.
All right. Well, best of luck to you since you've enjoyed doing it. You have the experience over these many years. I have 3 rental properties at this point. I love having them.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Clark. Thank you, Joel.
Sure.
Welcome.
And best to you. And Michael is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hello, Michael.
How you doing, Clark?
Great. Thank you, Michael. You're changing jobs.
I have changed jobs, and I left a 401k at my existing job, and I got a new 401k at this job. But I also have a business I have on the side that I've got a nice little nest egg in the savings account, which doesn't give me any interest. So I want to invest that. So I'm contemplating my old job 401k if I should take it to like a Fidelity account or roll over into the 401k here and just put my business savings into a Fidelity.
Okay, so
that makes sense?
Yeah, let's talk about a couple of things.
Okay.
The old employer's 401k, do you happen to know if it's a low cost, moderate cost, or high cost 401k?
It's low cost.
If it's low cost, I mean, you have the option of just leaving it there.
Okay, but I'm not putting any into it.
That's all right. If it's you want, with the money that you've worked to save and you sacrifice current spending to be able to have money down the road, you want to have it invested as efficiently as possible. If your new employer has a low-cost 401k, you can move the money from the old employer's 401k to the new one, and that's a strategy, and that way you don't have all these accounts all over the place.
That's my fear. I didn't want 5 different accounts when it comes, you know, something happens to me or retirement age, trying to figure out which I want to take from.
Sure.
None of them are Roth. None of them are Roth either, so... That's another thing I was thinking about, if I had a tip for my old 401k, if I should put into a Roth just to get that out of the way.
Well, you can't without paying a lot of tax.
That was my question when I emailed, is if I did that, would I have to pay a lot? Besides paying taxes, what other things do I have to worry about and something like that?
That's all you'd have to do. So if you take your 401k from your ex-employer and put it into an IRA, you then can... reclassify it, or whatever they call it, recharacterize it as a Roth, and then you have to pay tax, no penalty, but you pay tax on all that money. So if you're in a position you can afford to pay the tax bill, then that's a great strategy for the long term. How old are you, Michael?
52.
No, I wouldn't bother with that.
Oh, okay.
Wouldn't bother. I would not go through the expense of moving it to a Roth. If you just, you can leave it at the old company, you can move it to your current employer, you can move it to your own IRA. But what you do with your side business,
yes, that's
and
the other
extra thing. Income, putting that in a Roth IRA of your own, you're allowed to put $6,500 into a Roth because you're 52. You can boost that. Sorry?
I've seen that it was $6,500 because of my age.
Yeah, so that's a real advantage to you. So you have the money, you're contributing with your new employer, you have the money from the old employer, and that's all money that'll be taxable when you retire. And then you do this other pile that you do the $6,500 each year in the Roth IRA. I think about over, how long are you going to work till you're 60 what?
My 68, I believe it is. The number is what, that's the goal, but my side business is it's going to be, I'm an architectural designer, so I can sit this and do this till I'm 80 years old, you know, if I'm still sane.
Wonderful. So, you also have the option, let's say you save in the 401k at work, you do the Roth IRA, you are also allowed to do a SEP if you want to put aside even more money. I mean, you got lots of options here.
A what? A
SEP, Simplified Employee Pension.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. I've heard of that.
And so with the SEP, that's perfect when you have side income where you can put money in it because you're being paid independent contractor on what you're doing architectural design-wise.
Yes, yes. Yeah, and, so, you know, Uncle Sam is going to take a chunk of that
right.
if I don't put it someplace.
Right. So the SEP allows you to reduce taxable income.
Is that through my employer or is that through, how do
I? No, you do that on your own. Like you can go to Vanguard or you can go to Schwab, you can go to Fidelity, you can go to T. Rowe Price, any of the low-cost companies.
Okay.
And you can set up a SEP. The paperwork takes about 90 seconds.
Oh, I love that.
And then you're allowed to put aside from $0 in a year up to maybe $53,000, something like that.
Oh. If I made that, I quit my other job.
So the SEPs, you can save an enormous amount of money on a flexible basis, 25%, basically, this is shorthand, but it's 25% of your self-employed income can go into a SEP each year.
I like that idea.
And it's $54,000 now is what you can do in a SEP. So I was off $1,000, sorry.
Okay, so that's what my like my own pension plan then for my company.
Exactly. So you can have the money from your old 401k move to your new 401k. You can keep contributing to it. You can do the $6,500 in the Roth. You can do the SEP and reduce your income from your self-employment on the side. I mean, you have endless options to build up money over the next 16 years. That's what's so great. Everything you got going for you is an option because you're doing the hard work, saving the money, living on less than what you make. Melanie is with us on the Clark Howard Show. And Melanie, I was talking moments ago about Vanguard, Schwab, T. Rowe Price, Fidelity. You have a question about one of my four favorite children.
Yes, I do, Howard. Thanks for taking my call.
Certainly.
I was calling just to say, if you would recommend, if I went with the Vanguard, would you recommend for me to self-manage it, or do you recommend to actually have the advisor for them to manage it?
And the cost for them to manage it is how much?
I'm not sure.
Okay, so Vanguard offers a number of choices where they will help you manage, and there's a level, and I don't know what the minimum is, but it's a pretty big minimum, where for like 0.35%, they'll manage money for you, but that's not really what they're about necessarily. They're really more about self-serve. Tell me about the money you're interested in putting in.
Well, I have several different companies where I've worked, like different 401ks that I can roll into this, and then just like to open an investment account with them as well and contribute to that monthly. So, yeah, I'm just trying to see if I rolled all this money in together, would I be better off just to let them manage it and decide how to do it, or would I come out better or cheaper if I did it?
Well, I mean, that is your choice. Do you have $50,000 in all these different things added together?
Oh, yes.
Oh, great. So they'll charge you 0.30, I think is what it is. And they do a great job with it. I mean, they will do a mix of planning with you to make sure that you're trying to reach the objectives you want, that the risk levels are right, and how that money should be invested. And that is actually extremely inexpensive compared to what you normally pay to have somebody advise you on your money.
Yeah, because our company that I work for also offers Vanguard funds. I think they have some T. Rowe Price funds as well, but they're not as cheap. I think the Vanguard funds are just so much cheaper as far as the fees that we pay.
Yeah, both companies are great. The reason the T. Rowe Price costs more is their funds are what are known as managed, where they're trying to figure out exactly which stock they should own or what bond and how much of each they should have, where Vanguard is much more about just buying pieces of like all the companies there are and just throwing them together in a fund. But I, what I would do is I would call Vanguard and talk with somebody about what they'll offer to you, what they'll provide you, and how you actually access those services for the 0.30. And they are an incredibly great company. You can't go wrong using them. You're listening to the Clark Howard Show. I appreciate you spending part of your day with us here on the Clark Howard Show. I want you to know that if you need consumer advice, we're here to serve you off air for free, 9 hours a day. If you go to Clark.com and go down the home screen, you'll see a section, Consumer Help and Tools. Click on Consumer Action Center, and you can get that free off-the-air advice.